LDF is often used when clustering. And if you don't explain what the LDF is going to do, a reasonable response is, well, that's silly. You just formed these groups with a set of variables. Now you're going to see if you can tell those groups apart with the variables you use to define them. That's going to work well. And it will. But we know that the reason for running an LDF is not to get a p less than 0.05. It's to give a description of how those groups differ from each other. And there's even two different kinds of LDFs that you can do after your cluster analysis. The first I call an internal LDF. It always works. Can we discriminate between the groups using the same variables that defines them? Every freaking time. Unless we did a bad job of picking the number of clusters. If you pick way too many clusters, or even a few too many clusters, suddenly your reclassification isn't 100% because there aren't really that many groups with respect to those variables. Does that make sense? Did you ever, you know, you're organizing something and you create an organizational strategy that's too complicated and you can't do it consistently? A lot of people going, yeah. Everybody has OCD, raise your hand. Okay, that's what we mean here. That's what you can catch by running that LDF. If that internal LDF isn't perfect, you got to carefully think about whether you have the right number of clusters. Because it seems that you have imposed a too complicated structure on your data. You've kept more subgroups than there really are, and you can't tell them apart, even with the variables used to define them. So it's not a nonsensical thing to do, and sometimes it can save you from amazingly embarrassing things in public. We'll also learn something about what variables separate which groups. Not every group is going to be different on every variable, right? This is a way of capturing and describing on which variables are which groups differ. And we can also get a spatial model. Remember that concentrated, diffuse thing in LDF? If you've got multiple groups, do they really just line up? Are these really just height differences? Level differences? Or are there important profile differences so that we end up with a multidimensional space in which these groups lay? Because looking at these profiles gets really complicated really quickly. You bolster these with an internal analysis, and you can get much quicker, complete explanation of what you could see here if only you could see it. There's also what I like to call external LDFs. Using variables that were not in the cluster analysis, how do these clusters differ from each other? For example, one that we were working on a couple of weeks ago. A clinic, it's a pain clinic down in Dallas. Okay, they treat people with just horrible, intractable pain. And they have a whole bunch of intake variables. And they've got different treatments. And they've got outcome variables. And the question was, how do we decide who to give what kind of treatment? Because these treatments vary dramatically. I mean, some of them are essentially, meditation and feedback training and stuff like that, all the way up to a cannula with opiates. You know, a cannula is attached to you and it's feeding stuff in on a regular basis. There's a range of treatments, and you want to pick the right one. Okay? Well, essentially what you can do is you can start looking at the big nasty factorial of kinds of treatments by 30 or 40 intake variables. So we've got kind of treatment and 30 of these. We now have a 31 factor model. Just 31 factors. Not 31 predictors, because remember, this goes all the way up to a 31-way interaction. It takes most of the planet over a 20-year period to get the sample size up high enough to run that. Unfortunately, not everybody on the planet has intractable pain. So there's just no way to run this as a regular sort of study. So we say, let's take these intake variables and let's use cluster analysis. Let's try to find kinds of people who walk through the door. Make sense? And there's some psychological variables, there's some medical history variables, there's some treatment attempt variables, and then they put them through a pain threshold measure. And we decided that there were five basic kinds of people, and there were three basic treatments, and that 3x5 factorial design is a whole buttload easier to run than what we started out with. And we were able to identify that for three of these clusters, we could make specific treatment modality choices that more than doubled outcome success. For the other two, we had to find more stuff. This went on for years. We finally finished it up not too long ago. So three of these groups, we rocked. These other two groups needed more stuff in order to figure out which treatment is best for them. And for one of those groups, you know what turned out to be the most important variable? The treatment they liked. If I know that you're in this group based on your intake profile, I know that the next thing I do is describe these treatments to you and say, what do you want? Because that's going to be the one that works best. And you know what? That's not usually part of the medical model. Okay? You had to find that one. You had to replicate that one. You had to show that one by adding a bunch we used MMPI and MCMI measures, validity measures, and psychasthenia, and hypochondrias, being a hypochondriac, and a couple of other things that we sort of think of as fluffy variables. But those fluffy variables identified the people who need to be treated the way they want to be treated. And boom, they go home happy. And what else can you want? Okay? So, we've also done studies where we took these and clustered them. What are the kinds of people who walk out of here? Okay, you can cluster any damn thing you want. We did this first because who are the people who come in? How should we treat them to maximize quantitative scores on this? But we also turned around and said, I'll bet you there's kinds of people. There's basically three kinds of people, and if I gave you a second, you could guess them. They show good medical measures, but they're not happy. They're happy, but it doesn't look like they improved medically. You say objectively, that word, there's no such thing as objective. There's different levels of hope. And then there's those people who are just absolutely miserable and look like they ought to be miserable. When you take those three groups of people and try and figure out how we can anticipate that here, we now suddenly do a better job of picking treatments for them, and more people go home more happy. I know that's not good grammar, but it's a great idea. Cluster analysis allowed us to do things that we were not getting done when we assumed there was one kind of pain patient. And we tried all kinds of LDFs, whether it was injury-induced, whether it was congenital, whether it was had build up slowly or had a rapid onset, whether it was intermittent or chronic. We tried all those existing variables. None of those broke it open. What broke it open was the cluster analysis. Kinds of folks need to be treated differently to end up in different kinds of outcome categories. So let me just show you a couple quick pictures. This is with some data that we've seen before. Some clinically relevant variables, some adult females. This is the anxiety and the different kinds of social support. We had loneliness, three kinds of social support, state and trait anxiety and depression. When you're doing cluster analysis, it's a really good idea to do your clustering not with the original variables, but with Z-scores, so that all of them have the same variability. It's the same thing as when you're adding variables together. If you're trying to predict people's graduate performance and you add their GPA to their GRE, the GPA goes away, right? Because the GRE's got a huge amount of variability, just sucks up the GPA on the way past. Same thing. So you convert everything to Z-scores, and you get much better results because now it's the meaningful variability of the scale of the measure, not just the measurement scale. And the way you get those is you go to analyze descriptive statistics, descriptives, save the standardized values as variables. Now we're going to do it, and you get a whole new set of variables that all have Z in front of them. So rules becomes Z rules, SOSS becomes Z SOSS. And notice that we used those Z versions when we did the clustering. analyze, classify, hierarchical clustering, select the variables. Notice that we can cluster cases or variables. What we're talking about now is clustering cases. We want to find kinds of people. The agglomeration schedule can help us decide how many clusters, and we're going to we'd like to know the cluster membership, and we can get it out of there, but it doesn't work as well. What we're going to do instead, okay, hold on a second.